We are continuing our series in Luke. Today we are in Luke 12, verses 13 through 21. And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and will build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall these things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And so we see a man in the crowd coming up and asking Jesus, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Now, stop thinking in 21st century American and think to first century Israel. Such an inheritance would probably include vineyards, fields, flocks, olive trees, wine presses or olive presses, agricultural assets and implements. And so a division here is not a simple splitting of money. And we're not sure by the context whether the man wants to be able to use his share or wants his brother to physically divide it and divide assets that are hard to divide. Agricultural assets, if you divide them, can have the effect of making it impossible to work. For instance, how do you divide an olive press in half? I've seen one not too long ago. They're pretty heavy, but you can't divide them in half. So this man, in asking Jesus to tell his brother, is really asking Jesus to take his side in the dispute, to help him get what he wants. This is a very, very common human issue, and it illustrates a point which we're going to speak about, but I've seen it during my lifetime. People will grieve, they'll bury a family member, but soon after that's done, the desire to get something out of the estate is going to emerge. Bitter fights that can endure over years, that can endure over lifetimes, result as people wrangle over who gets what. And often, in my experience, an estate seems to bring out the worst in people. They justify their behavior by saying they deserve whatever it is they want. I've seen people put in phony bills to an estate for work they did not do. I've seen items that were of value grow legs and walk away. And other things which really, really brought out the worst in people and surprised you, and you say, I didn't think so-and-so would do that. Now, Jesus refuses to get involved in this conflict. He says, I'm not getting into it. Instead, He asked the man, who appointed him judge? You know, if someone asks you to get into that in the division of an estate, my advice to you is flee. So Jesus knew the thoughts and motives of this man. We're not told what he knew, but we can kind of surmise, because immediately he warns against what? Greed. Greed. Beware of greed. A man's life does not consist of his stuff, even if he has a lot. And covetousness is a special kind of greed. It's a burning desire to get what it is you want, regardless of the means you use to get it. And I have seen various estates over the years. Greed is a great driver of conflict. The strong desire to get something. And so Jesus tells him, be on your guard against greed. And even if you have more, or even if you have much more, your life does not consist of possessions. Rich people are not necessarily happy, as we see them sometimes take refuge in alcohol, drugs, multiple marriages, lavish spending that accomplishes not too much, and they may even live in such despair that they take their own lives. Look up when you get home the poem Richard Cory, and you see a picture of that in literature. So chasing wealth, chasing possessions, is not the answer to the problems of life. Your life cannot simply consist of possessions. So let me turn the page back to my college days in the old times. I won't tell you how many years ago. Anthropologists are going to tell you that your entire life consists of three relationships. And the emphasis varies from society to society, but all societies have them. It would be man to man to environment, man to God. So there's social relationships, spiritual relationships, and environmental relationships. So social relationships are going to include family, government, customs, common culture. Spiritual would include our worship in relationship to God. Environmental relationships would include such things as farming, fishing, mining, forestry, any practice that produces a tangible product when we act on our environment. And of course, the man-to-environment relationship is what produces our possessions. And we're going to see that in the parable. And so we have a rich man, and his land is very productive. And this is a great blessing from God. All that we have comes from God. And many of us have been blessed. And when this happens, when we're blessed, then there's a question of stewardship. What will you do with what you get? Along with whatever property or wealth, we Americans tend to think of everything in money, but money is not everything. Any skill or ability that you might possess is a blessing from God, and that makes you a steward of that particular skill or ability. So, you know, some people are wonderful encouragers, and they go visit someone, and the person has a smile on their face long after they left. some people are great at hospitality. You go out of their house and you say, what a wonderful meal they gave me, or how nice whatever it is they did. And so if you are a steward of a blessing, some people can teach, some people can do any number of sorts of things. That skill or ability, what do you do with it? How do you use it? How do you share it? Do you share it? So in my former church, just as an example, there was a woman who could sing, and she sang often, and she put her whole soul into the singing. You could hear her faith through the words. And when she sang, I would remember it during the subsequent week and play it over in my mind. And that song on Sunday was a blessing to me all week. And so it was certain that she used that skill and ability to the glory of God and to the edification of the people. So now we turn back to our farmer. He has good land. He's been blessed with a bountiful harvest. And so, as a steward of God's blessing, what is he going to do with the harvest? Because along with the blessing comes a problem. It's too bountiful. He can't store it all. Simply too much for his available storage capacity, but a crop's got to be harvested. You can't leave hay or oats out in the field because it's going to rot. Now, we don't know exactly what crop he harvested. The only thing listed specifically is grain. The other items of the harvest are simply described as goods. Here I'm making an assumption, an educated assumption, that we're talking about things like grapes, olives, dates, figs. They were part of the harvest in Israel then. They're part of the harvest in Israel to this day, along with a tremendous amount of bananas, if you can believe it. They got fields and fields of bananas over there. They're all covered up with cheesecloth, so you can see 30, 40 acres of white. And if you get up close, the bunches of bananas are all covered up by blue bags. I never could find out why. So now, here's the question of how to manage this bountiful crop and the stewardship. And so it's answered in two parts. Our farmer resolves the problem by deciding to tear down his current barns and build bigger ones. And the crops can't be left in the field to spoil. That would be a waste. And so he doesn't want to avoid waste. He's going to increase his storage capacity till there's enough to store everything. And after the crop is stored, he solved problem number one and saved from being wasted. Then the question remains, what are you going to do with it? How will this great blessing from God be handled? That's the essence of stewardship. It's marvelous to be blessed. What will you do with the blessing? That's a question for each one of us, by the way. What are you going to do with the blessings God has given you as an individual? In the parable, the answer is clear. In essence, our farmer can now retire. Blessing of God will be for him and him alone. He'll consume this bountiful harvest, even if the consumption takes him many years. It will enable him to take his ease and not work so hard. He's going to eat and drink from the harvest. He's going to enjoy it to the fullest. Now that's what we see. What we don't see is any thanksgiving to God for the blessings that he got. What we don't see is any concern for others who might be in need. So the man-to-man relationship in concern for his fellow man is neglected totally. The man-to-God relationship is also neglected. In other words, it's me and what's mine. So, you know, it puts us in mind of the rich man who couldn't spare anything to eat for the poor man that laid at his gate. No giving thanks to God, no sharing of the blessings of God, but a determination to keep everything for himself. I've known people that live their life that way. As a general rule, I have not found them to be happy people. But now comes the unexpected. And there's a problem, and it cannot be resolved by building bigger barns. A rich man is called to give account. God says his soul is required that very night. He must die, and he has to give an account of what he has done. And there's an added question, something of an ironic question. Who will now own what he has prepared and laid up? For he will not live to consume it. And this is a great truth that we don't often think about because we don't care to think about it. But all of us must leave our worldly possessions behind when we die. We are advised to think about the end of a man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. In the classic work, A Christmas Carol, a bunch of women meet at a pawn shop and one woman has a very nice suit. And she said, I've saved it from being wasted. And they said, what do you mean? She said, well, if I had stolen it, they'd have buried him in it. His second best suit, plenty good for him. And so we see them laughing and cracking jokes as they sell the stuff that they've stolen after the man was dead. So what can we learn from this portion? Well, first and foremost is the point that the portion was meant to illustrate. Beware of greed. Why must we beware of greed? The reason is simple. Even if you get what you want and have many possessions, life does not and cannot consist of possessions. There is the man-to-man relationship and the man-to-God relationship, and these things must be considered. It's a material society. All of us, including myself, are into possessions. We have more stuff than probably any generation. And so, knowing this, what questions should we be asking of ourselves? And I will pose a few. Are you in some kind of dispute right now concerning possessions? Are you holding a grudge regarding a past dispute over possessions? Can you see yourself as being similar to the man asking Jesus to help him in a dispute with his brother? Understand, he is approaching the greatest source of spiritual insight and spiritual blessing that ever existed. Can you imagine what you might ask Jesus if you saw him face to face? I don't know. I need a notebook to write down all my questions of stuff I'd like to know. Our man wants help in order to get something. His eyes are blinded to the power and spiritual authority of Jesus by his desire to get something. The first question is whether the desire to get something or the lingering anger over something you thought you deserved but did not get is standing in the way of the knowledge of God and the relationship with God. We've all had arguments over the years over various issues. I know I have. Do you consider yourself a steward of all you own or the undisputed owner? The steward does not own anything. He carefully manages what has been given him to manage, but he understands it's not his. As a steward, do you thank God for your blessings? As a steward, do you look to share those blessings with others? You have an interest in putting a smile on somebody's face. What drives your decision making? Now, Jesus said, beware of greed. And I'm going to reduce it down to two twin pillars that hold up the house of grief, greed. You know, like Samson had two pillars in the temple where he was chained up. Two pillars. Number one, to get. Number two, to keep. Our farmer got a bountiful harvest by the blessings of God. Many of us have been blessed with God, so we have all sorts of things. It could be material possessions. It could be talent and ability. I hasten to add, there's nothing wrong with being blessed by God. It's a wonderful thing. We see him blessing Abraham and Isaac in the Old Testament. The question is whether your life is driven by the desire to get and then to keep. As soon as our farmer was blessed by God, he directed his attention to the issue of keeping what he got. And I have known people like this. They hung on to everything. Whatever they could get, they hung on to it. Some of them kept all sorts of things that they really had no use for, but it was theirs and they kept it. So if we're going to look at possessions, if we're going to look at your fellow man, if you're going to look at your relationship with God, in most any society, there is an emphasis on one of the three areas, sometimes two. And so many primitive societies that don't have much in the way of possessions have very intricate man-to-man relationships. They have sodalities, they have clubs, they have customs, they have traditions. So are your fellow men important to you? Do you try to bless them with abilities and assets? Is your relationship to God important? Do you make an honest effort to come and worship when the church meets? How about ministry? Are you willing to use the talents God has given you for ministry? Are you willing to invest time, which is a finite resource? Finally, the last thing that our farmer had to do, are you ready to give an account? For all of us will. Eventually, when you leave this life and all of your many possessions behind, will you be found to be rich toward God? An interesting question, and one each will have to answer for themselves. As we get ready to move into our communion service, I can't help but think about the last time I did communion. It was in the Garden Tomb, actually. And there was a number of little grottos there. And so we were in one of those grottos very close to the Garden Tomb. So there was stonework there and there was benches. Picture the scene for the drink and the elements. There was turned cups made out of olive wood. I took a particular interest in them. And as we got ready, there was another group just a little ways away in a similar grotto. They were singing, "Sheep May Safely Graze." And I will have to tell you, that group was beautiful. Oh, what voices. And you could feel the spirit in that place. As I was praying and getting ready to distribute the elements, it was difficult even to speak. Over to the right of where we were, there was a cliff face with two holes in it, and then the remains of a nose that looked just like a skull. It has deteriorated some, but they showed us a picture from about 100 years past, and it looked distinctly at that time like a skull. And so there we were, stone's throw away from the entrance to the tomb. It was a very, very moving moment, and I only wish that all of you could have been there with us. But what we do in remembrance. We do so that we don't get so busy in the course of life and so busy with the various issues, problems, and work we do that we forget. And so at this time, if my men will come,